Welcome to New York Zen Center for Contemplative Care's podcast. This free podcast is made possible through your generosity. Please consider making a donation through our Ways to Give link on zencare.org.
Good morning, everybody. I love learning. I realized that might be my worldview. That there's always something to learn in each moment. A dear Dharma friend and fellow Zen person, Peter Levitt, who's a wonderful poet and translator of Dogen, sent me this poem that he wrote for his mother when she died. It says, "Mother, you were born, so I was born. You will die, and I will follow you there. How can I thank you all this time preparing the ground?" For many years, I had lots of feelings. I still have a lot of feelings. But about this one aspect of a meal chant that we do usually on retreat, where it said, first, this food is for the three treasures. I was down with that. And then it said, second is for our teachers. And then the second word was parents. I always had a lot of challenge about that. I love my parents. As most parents are, they were challenging. This Thanksgiving, we were in Mexico, suffering that for all beings. Taking one for the team, as they say, at the beach in the Caribbean. And I was really just woke up on Thanksgiving morning feeling so appreciative of my parents in a way that I had never felt before. Kodo Sawaki, who I was reading a lot while I was away, talks about carry them on your backs. Without them, you wouldn't be here. I was always confused by expressions like that too. What did that mean? Does that mean I have to do anything that they say? That's where I kind of had a confusion. Mother, you were born, so I was born. You will die, and I'll follow you there. How can I thank you all this time preparing the ground? Every morning here, I, you know, light incense at all the different altars. And I think about our ancestors here, people who have been members of this community who have died, preparing the ground. That which will return. And I've been studying some early Buddhist texts called the Agama Sutras. And it was a kind of a class of sutras that most people think of as Theravadan texts, whatever that means. But really just means it's like the oldest texts that have been found. And the mythology around them is that they're supposedly what the Buddha said. Of course, they weren't written down until 500 years later. And so I love our mythology. For sure you said it. I mean, who can remember what we said last week? So, but some of the teachings are quite interesting. Helpful. Whether whoever said them, we can call it the Buddha. Yeah, but according to our mythology in Buddhism, they were collected at this time of called the First Council, where a group of people after the Buddha's death got together and decided like what was actually said. Imagine that conversation. What do you actually say? And then having a discussion about it. And then writing that down as if that's what was said. We should do that. What did the Buddha actually say? And we'll write it down. We'll all agree. Or not agree. And write it down. So that's what happened. The Gammas are also thought to be sometimes a collection of texts for devotional schools. The term agama literally means that which comes down. And they tend to describe a cosmology or epistemology or a philosophical idea. But in one of these texts, the Gama Sutras, there's a very fun story that I like about a man and his four friends. And as we know, we're in a very male-based tradition. So far that's part of the mythology. So there's a man with his four friends, and one friend always lived with him. And he complied with everything what his friend wanted. No matter what the friend wanted, he would give it up. Wanted new furniture, different kinds of food, whatever. No problem. He would buy it for the friend. He had another friend that, you know, was kind of annoying. He wasn't so wild about this other friend. But, you know, when that friend was away, he missed her. You might have a friend like that. And actually, like, if he didn't see her for a long time, he felt kind of uneasy. Where is she? That was the second friend. The third friend was almost like the second friend. Except that when something was really weighing on his mind, this is the person he would go to talk to. She was quite wise and really appreciated. And he felt like that when he talked to her, that she really could receive him. And on very special occasions, he would visit her home. That was the third friend. The fourth, well, he was like a slave. He was always with him and helped him like a slave, but never said, but he never appreciated this friend at all. His friend would do anything he wanted, no matter what, and was never appreciated for it. That was the fourth friend. At the end of this man's life, he was very lonely and didn't want to die alone. The first friend said, "No, I'm not going to do that with you. I'm not going to die with you. No way." He asked the second friend if she would go to heaven or to hell with him, wherever they were going. And she said, "Why should I go with you?" And your other friend refused. "So I'm not going." And the third one, and they had such a dear, tender relationship. The one who really could see him and hear him. His wise girlfriend. Refused him too. But when he asked his fourth friend, who was like a slave, like a servant, he said, "Of course I will." "When I became your friend, I knew I'd be with you forever. So I will die with you." Of course, in this sutra, it's a parable. The first friend, it talks about being your body. That one where you do whatever it wants. And the second one is your possessions, your stuff. And the third one is a beloved relative or a beloved person. And the fourth one is your own mind. That the only thing that's going to go with you. And to me, it's so important to remember. That no matter what, our body, our possessions, and loved ones are not going with us. And how do we renew our practice remembering that? To realize how important each moment is. I have a practice in the mornings that every time I leave the house, always, and so far, I've done this every day for the last 16 years, my relationship with Chodo, where actually every time I leave the house, I hold his face and kiss him goodbye. so precious to me. Because I don't know. And I do this because I don't know if I'll ever see them. And to me, this is so enlivening, actually. Some people are like, oh, that's so depressing. It's like, well, actually, it's to me the only thing in some ways that makes any sense. How to be fully generous with myself and my expression. How do we do that in each moment? Giving fully and freely, moment by moment. How do we renew our generosity? And realizing that it's always running out. So many people have prepared the ground for our death. We don't actually have to worry about that. But how do we actually live? And allow ourselves to fully live? Time is running out. How will you hold it? How will you care? How will you be generous? And how will you love?